The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, the original story of Father Frost features death by freezing, parental abuse, and neglect. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Nastya sat at the base of a fir tree. She'd been stranded in the wilderness for hours, with only a damp and threadbare coat to keep her warm. The sun had set long ago, and the temperature had dropped well below freezing. Her teeth chattered, and her body was racked with violent shivers. Bit by bit, the fits of shaking fell off, until she was completely still. She no longer had the energy to shiver. Nastya's eyelashes were so caked with ice that it was hard to keep them open. She concentrated on moving her hand, but her extremities had lost all feeling. Finally, with great strength of will, she managed to swing her hand in front of her face for examination. Her fingers were black. This was the end. She'd been left here to die in the cold, and perhaps she should. Nastya let her eyes close and her head fall back against the icy bark of the tree. It was then that she heard a deafening snap ring out from the depths of the forest. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales, a Parcast original. Every other Saturday, we dive into the dark origins of another fairy tale. You can find all episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Tales for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Tales in the search bar. At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. And if you enjoyed today's episode, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. It really does help. Today we'll be telling the story of King Frost, a Russian fairy tale featuring the ancient figure of Dead Moroz, a winter deity who can be just as dangerous as he is lovable. The origins of Father Frost have deep roots in Russian folklore. Up until the 9th century CE, the predominant religious belief in much of Eastern Europe was in Slavic paganism, and included in its pantheon was the mythical snow demon Morozka. Morozka was a powerful wizard who used his prowess as a blacksmith to turn water into ice. Though he occasionally used his powers for good, he just as often turned them towards evil. Early stories of Morozka tell of peasants bribing him with oatmeal kissel or rice porridge. Feeding Morozka was said to keep him from freezing the crops, but failing to appease him could have even more serious consequences. Morozka was known to kidnap children if their parents disrespected him. And if they refused to pay his ransom, he'd keep the children as his slaves. As Christianity gained dominance in Russia, Morozka took on some attributes of his Christian counterpart, Saint Nicholas. By the 19th century, he'd transformed into the friendlier and less enigmatic character of Dead Moroz. After the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917, the communists prohibited all religious practice. Dead Moroz, with his connections to St. Nicholas, was denounced as a Christian figure and banned for being an oppressive tool of the bourgeoisie. 20 years later, the Soviet government was experiencing massive civil unrest due to a campaign of brutal political repression and widespread famine. Stalin lifted the ban on Father Frost in hopes that the once beloved figure would boost nationalist sentiment and help him gain the support of the Russian populace. The reinvented Dead Moroz was a staunch supporter of hard work and communist values. he brought presents and propagandist lectures to good children on New Year's Eve. Today, Father Frost is a complicated amalgam of his many identities. Of the stories told about him, one of the most famous was implanted in the public consciousness by a Scottish novelist named Andrew Lang. In 1894, Lang published The Yellow Fairy Book, one in a series of 12 multicolored fairy books. In it was the story of a poor woodcutter's daughter and her run-in with the infamous Father Frost. Stanislava woke to an incessant dripping sound. She looked down to see that her blankets were soaking wet. She lifted herself groggily from bed and surveyed the sleeping loft. After a moment, she saw it. The hole in the roof that had not been repaired properly. Her stepdaughter was to blame for this. Nastya slept on the floor and awoke with the dawn. What did she care if the midday snowmelt leaked into the loft? Stanislava climbed down the ladder into the main room of the izba. Even in bright daylight, the little cabin remained dark and gloomy. A thick layer of grime lay over everything, and the musty smell of foul cabbage clung to her nose and throat. Perhaps it was fit for a wretch like Nastya, but this was no place for a girl as delicate and refined as Stanislava's own daughter. In the dim light, Stanislava stumbled over the dog, making it yelp in pain. She kicked the dog out of her way, retrieved a tin bucket, and walked outside to fill the bucket with water and search for her stepdaughter. Her eyes scanned the yard until there. Nastya knelt in a field next to a pile of upturned earth. Stanislava stalked towards her, bucket in hand. Before the girl could say a word, Stanislava flung the bucket of ice-cold water over her.
"Next time I ask you to repair the roof, you'll do it right," she shrieked at the stunned child.
That would teach the girl to disobey her stepmother's orders. Nastya looked down at the potato in her hand. This morning she had awakened to a cold, dead hearth and a nearly empty larder. She'd gone outside to fetch wood and build a roaring fire. Next, she'd gone out to the fields to dig for potatoes. It had already been a difficult day when the sun peeked over the horizon. Now that it was noon and her stepmother was awake, it would only get harder. Nastya stood up and approached the izba. Her little dog Malish ran to greet her. She picked him up and gave him a kiss. She peeked in the window to ensure that her stepmother was not about and entered the house to put on dry clothes. Nastya looked around the dirty little cottage. Years ago, it had been warm and welcoming. Back then, her father had the energy to help with chores and provide food. Everything changed when her mother died. He became silent, never slept, and barely ate. Nastya had worried they would starve until they met Stanislava and Marfushka. At first, they'd seemed harmless. Marfushka was lazy and entitled, but she was too empty-headed to be cruel. Stanislava wasn't kind, but at least she had given Papa a reason to wake up in the morning. Unfortunately, it wasn't long before her stepmother had taken advantage of Vasily. She berated him constantly and forced him to work himself ragged earning money for Marfushka's dowry. They may not have been starving, but it was as though her father's very soul had been extinguished. Nastya pulled on one of her father's dry coats. She did not have any other shoes, so she would have to wear her wet ones. Hopefully, she could make quick work of the roof repairs. Marfushka and Vasily returned from the village to find Stanislava pacing furiously around the cottage. She called out to her husband,
"Your daughter tried to kill me this morning."
Vasily shrugged and collapsed onto a wooden stool. Stanislava asked him what he was going to do about it. Again, he just heaved his shoulders. Stanislava ranted about how Nastya was a plague on the family, how she wanted them all dead so that she could have the house and Marfushka's dowry. Marfushka sat up at the mention of her own name, but quickly lost interest when she realized they were still talking about Nastya. Stanislava turned to her daughter.
If Nastya wants to freeze me, then we'll do the same to her.
Marfushka shrugged and asked who would do the housework without her stepsister. Stanislava assured her that without Nastya, the housework would practically do itself. Marfushka suggested that perhaps they should send Nastya away to live with Vasily's sister in Suzdal. Stanislava screamed in rage at the thought.
She'll come back to burn down the house unless we get rid of her for good. Why, just this morning I saw her steal your coat, Vasily.
At that moment, the door swung open, and there stood Nastya, clothed plain as day in her father's coat. Her stepmother practically hissed with rage. Vasily put his head in his hands and began to cry. Nastya gawked at her sobbing father. She had no idea that her fate had been sealed. Coming up, Nastya must fight to stay alive. Thank you so much for listening. We want to take this time to tell you that Tales will be taking January 4th off for the holidays. We'll be back with a brand new episode on January 18th. In the meantime, we do have a special gift to share with you. While we're away, we'll be airing our listeners' most requested episode of 2019. If you'd like to check out the most requested episodes from Parcast's other shows, subscribe to Parcast Presents to hear our best of 2019. From everyone here at Parcast, we'd like to wish you a happy holiday season. We're thankful for your support and look forward to bringing you even more unique and entertaining podcasts in the new year. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the story. Nastya's tense relationship with her stepmother had come to a breaking point. Stanislava, convinced that her stepdaughter wanted to destroy the family, was demanding that her husband get rid of his own daughter. Nastya knelt beside her papa and tried to comfort him, but that only made him cry harder. Eventually, he dried his eyes and told Nastya they were going to take a trip. She wanted to ask why, but didn't want to make him upset again. Instead, she just nodded and went outside to hitch the horse to the sleigh. As she left, Stanislava called out after her,
"Before you go, take off the coat that you've stolen from your father."
With a heavy sigh, Nastya shrugged off her father's old coat and put on her own damp one before going outside into the winter chill. The hours passed in silence as the tired old horse pulled Nastya and her father deeper and deeper into the woods. Her father's tears made her feel as though her heart was being wrenched from her chest. She wondered if they were going to Suzdal, where her aunt lived. Stanislava must have asked Papa to send her away. That was why he was crying. Stanislava had made him into a shattered shell of a man. But without her, Nastya worried that her father would wither away to nothing. Eventually, the sled pulled to a halt at the edge of an ice-crusted field. Her father said that the horse was getting tired and needed to rest. He asked Nastya to go into the woods and gather sticks for a fire. There was little dry kindling to be found in the frozen pine forest. Nastya wandered further and further into the woods. Soon she could barely see the edge of the trees. She squinted into the distance and picked out the thin figure of her papa. She called to him, but stopped when she saw him climbing back into the sleigh. She frowned. What was he doing? Had he been so distressed that he'd forgotten about her? Or A chill ran down her spine as Nastya realized what was happening. She dropped the wood and began to run. When she reached the field at the edge of the forest, it was too late. He had disappeared, and she would never catch up. Nastya understood now why her father had been so distraught. He hadn't been upset about sending her to live with his sister. He'd been crying because he knew that he was leaving her to die. Nastya's heart sank. She hadn't realized the extent of Stanislava's power over her father. Perhaps through the fog of his melancholy, her papa thought he was saving her from starvation. Perhaps he hadn't even understood what he was doing. Nastya sank down against a tree at the edge of the forest. As she sat, her coat turned into an icy cast around her body. A light frost formed on her eyelashes. Soon it grew so thick that she had trouble keeping her eyes open. Night fell, and the moon spilled a cold light over the swaying shadows of the forest. Nastya's numb hands hung at the ends of her arms, as though they were dead things, unconnected to her body. The forest made eerie, creaking sounds. To Nastya, it sounded like devilish voices were coming from within the trees. Every so often, a tremendous snap thundered out of the darkness, as though the very trees themselves were exploding. A tear fell from Nastya's eye. As it touched her cheek, it froze solid, but she did not have the energy to wipe it away. She leaned back and let her eyes close. Nastya had been violently shivering for hours. Now she could feel her heartbeat slowing as the uncontrollable shaking stilled. A vicious crack brought Nastya out of her stupor. She might have thought it was another tree exploding, but this was louder, sharper, and closer, as though a giant had snapped his fingers right behind her. She made the colossal effort of turning her head to look around, but there was nothing there. Then the sound came again, and again. With each snap, the forest around her grew colder. The frost covering the trees became thicker, and the powdery snow on the ground settled into a gleaming crust of ice. Nastya sat up. The air was so cold that even she, in her state of benumbed stupor, could feel the terrible chill. A fine dust of snow swept across the field, carried on a wicked gust of wind. Again, Nastya heard a noise that made her start up in surprise. It was the crack of a whip, accompanied by the clank of a metal harness and the distinctive sound of horses' hooves pattering against ice. She moved her head again, this time squinting into the depths of the frozen forest. Three white horses, bedecked with embroidered reins and harnesses, were speeding towards her. They pulled a troika made of a rich dark wood and set on runners of gleaming silver. Standing in the sled and cracking a chain of ice was a figure she recognized at once. It was Dead Morrows, the god of frost. The troika whipped across the ice before coming to a stop at the meeting of woods and field. The horses whinnied and stamped their feet. The ground beneath them, which had been earth mere seconds ago, was now covered in a smooth layer of ice. The massive figure of Dead Morrows stepped down from the sled. He was at least 7 feet tall and dressed in a cloak of deep blue velvet, embroidered with golden thread and trimmed with white fur. Nastya didn't know if she'd ever seen anything so rich and fine. His face was covered in white hair, and all that Nastya could see of his features were his sparkling blue eyes and the bulbous protrusions of his red nose and cheeks. He carried a massive staff of carved white ice. When it touched the ground, it made a crackling sound, as though the very air itself were freezing solid. He moved from tree to tree like a mountain goat, strong, swift, and impossibly agile. His fingers were long, thin, and tapered like icicles. Each time he snapped them, they made the same booming sound that Nastya had heard before. When he reached her, the air had grown so cold that her heart struggled to beat against the bitter chill in her chest. The Frost King looked down at her and smiled widely, showing a mouthful of pointed icicle teeth. In an unearthly voice, like the crackle of ice, he turned to her and asked,
"Well, maiden, do you know who I am?"
Nastya opened her mouth to speak, but as soon as she did, her lips and tongue were covered in ice. Dead Morrows laughed. The sound was like the tinkling of 1,000 icicles. He continued,
"I am King Frost, King of the Red Noses."
Then he gnashed his teeth together, snapped his fingers, and gave her a terrifying grin. Nastya felt her heart skip a beat. With great effort, she wrenched her frozen lips apart and managed to whisper through them,
"All hail to you, great king. Have you come to take me?"
The Frost King cocked his head curiously. He smiled again and gnashed his terrible teeth.
"Are you warm, maiden?" he asked her.
Nastya looked up at him. She was so cold that she could barely think, but she also knew that one must not make demands of a king. She pried her frozen lips apart and said,
"Quite warm, King Frost."
King Frost leapt up onto the branch of a tree. He jumped down again, and where the soles of his valenque touched the ground, the snow turned to a thick layer of ice. He leaned in close to her, his breath an arctic gust that stung her eyes. He asked again,
"Maiden, are you warm? Are you warm, beautiful girl?"
She had to lean away from him to speak, and even then she found it hard to breathe out a whispered answer.
"Quite warm, King Frost,"
she said, knowing that to speak otherwise would be the highest disrespect. King Frost leaned back and cackled madly. His eyes sparkled as he stomped his feet and snapped his fingers, releasing a hail of crackling icicles from the trees above them. Finally, he leaned down to her one final time and asked,
"Maiden, are you still warm? Are you still warm, little love?"
She let the faintest smile flit across her lips as she hissed out an answer to his question.
"Still warm, O King."
Coming up, Nastya is rewarded for the respect that she has shown King Frost. Now back to the story. Nastya's father had left her in the woods to die, and she'd been ready to meet her fate bravely, until she'd come face to face with the strange and terrifying King Frost. King Frost looked down at the pitiable creature in front of him. He could see that she was close to death. Her lips were blue, and her hair and clothes were caked with ice. He'd never seen a human look so frail. Yet when he asked if she was cold, she'd been courteous and polite, eager to show the respect that was due a king. He tapped his staff against the ground, and from it sprang a road of polished ice. Father Frost gave a sharp whistle, and his horses cantered up to where he stood, stopping in front of him with a whinny and a snort. Father Frost reached into his sled and pulled out a magnificent coat of white ermine fur. He wrapped it around the frozen girl and then retrieved a fur-lined kokoschnik of blue silk from his pocket. He placed the crown-like hat upon the girl's head and watched in delight as the color returned to her face. Finally, he pulled out a cloak of heavy camlet edged in fox fur. He placed it over her head and held out a hand. The girl took it, rising to her feet and looking down in wonder at her new clothes. He helped her into his sled, and together they rode off into the rising sun. Stanislava stood next to the stove, watching bubbles form on the surface of a thin golden pancake. She had not felt so good in years. Now that Nastya was gone, everything would be better. There would be more money, more food, more of everything for everyone. She'd awoken this morning in such a generous mood that she'd even offered to throw a funeral for the girl. She'd send her husband out to retrieve the frozen body and bury it by the cowshed before sitting down to a meal of blini, the traditional funerary pancake. Stanislava called out to her husband,
"Vasily, if you'd like your pancakes warm, you ought to go soon to fetch your daughter's body."
Vasily appeared at the edge of the sleeping loft. His eyes were puffy and red from crying. He climbed down and sat on a wooden stool to pull on his boots. Malish, Nastya's dog, poked his little head out from under the table. He growled at Stanislava and then went to sit by Vasily. He looked into the old man's eyes, gave a sharp bark, and said,
"Your daughter shall live to be your delight. Her daughter shall die this very night."
Vasily seemed not to notice the dog's cruel words, but Stanislava felt a shiver go up her back. Such foolishness from a member of her own household would not stand. Stanislava took a piece of the pancake she was cooking and knelt down next to the dog. She looked at the dog and told him,
"Hold your tongue, you foolish beast. There's a pancake for you, but you must say, 'Her daughter shall have much silver and gold. His daughter is frozen, quite stiff and cold.'"
She held the pancake out to the dog, who ate it quite happily. Malish looked at Vasily before giving a sharp bark and cried out,
"His daughter shall wear a crown on her head. Her daughter shall die unwooed, unwed."
Stanislava's face contorted with rage. She gave a sharp kick to the dog, who yelped and ran under the table before crying out again,
"Your daughter shall live to be your delight. Her daughter shall die this very night."
Stanislava screamed in fury. She dove under the table and reached for the dog, but Malish had backed into a corner and could not be reached. Stanislava went back to the stove for another piece of pancake. She knelt by the table, this time trying to tempt the little dog. She cooed to him and told him if he'd stop telling such terrible lies, he could have as many pancakes as he wanted. Malish only sat under the table, barking and saying the same words over and over.
"Your daughter shall live to be your delight. Her daughter shall die this very night."
They continued like this until the front door flew open with a gust of cold wind. Standing in the doorway was Nastya, but she was no longer a simple peasant girl. Now she was a radiant beauty, bedecked in a jewel-encrusted sarafan of golden silk. Over the golden frock, she wore two elegant fur cloaks, each of them worth more than their izba and everything in it. Then there was a kokoshnik of blue silk sitting like a crown atop her golden curls. For a moment, everyone stared at her. Then Nastya broke into a broad smile. She leapt into her father's arms, and they both wept with joy. Stanislava stared at the girl, incredulous. She was supposed to be dead, but here she was, perfectly alive, and dressed like an empress. Nastya turned to her stepmother. She told Stanislava that she bore her no ill will. She even hugged her stepsister, who had emerged blearily from the back room.
"What happened to you?"
asked Marfushka. Nastya held up a finger. Her eyes sparkled with excitement. She said she would tell her story soon, but first she must show them one more thing. Nastya dashed outside. When she returned, she was dragging a heavy lacquered trunk behind her. It was brightly painted and overlain with mother of pearl. When Nastya swung it open, Stanislava and her daughter gasped. It was filled to the brim with gold and silver coins. Nastya grinned and took her stepsister's hand, telling her,
"There are two more outside. Come, help me bring them in."
Stanislava turned to her husband. Vasily was still crying tears of joy, so she slapped him across the face to calm him.
"Vasily, you must hitch the horse to the sled and take my Marfushka to the same spot where you took Nastya."
Vasily looked at her, wide-eyed. He shook his head, but Stanislava slapped him again.
"Nastya may be rich, but we are not. She will take her gold and leave us destitute. Now, if your lazy, useless daughter can come back from the forest with two chests of gold, just think what my Marfushka will bring home."
For a moment, Stanislava thought she saw a flicker of anger in her husband's face, but then his shoulders sagged, and he nodded his assent. Marfushka looked in envy at the trunks of gold and fine clothes. She had not realized there was such treasure to be made just from spending a night in the woods. She only tore her eyes away from the hoard when her mother called to her. Marfushka ran to Stanislava, who spoke in a low voice.
"My dear child, I have told your stepfather to take you to the woods and leave you where he left Nastya, so that you may come home with chests of treasure as she has."
Marfushka considered this. She didn't like the idea of being left out in the cold, but if that was how Nastya had gotten her fortune, it would certainly be worth it. Marfushka agreed and skipped off to where her stepfather was waiting with the sled. The journey through the wilderness was long and cold. The little wooden seat of the sled was terribly hard. By the time they reached the spot where Nastya had been left, Marfushka was eager to be done with the long, uncomfortable ride. She stepped off the sleigh and gestured for her stepfather to leave. Vasily gave her a sad look and then shook the horse's reins and was on his way. Marfushka looked around her. It didn't look like the sort of place where a fortune could be made, but if Nastya could do it, then why couldn't she? Marfushka sat against the base of a great fir tree and awaited her destiny. It hadn't been more than an hour when Marfushka heard a loud snapping sound. She looked up at the field in front of her. For a moment, she didn't see anything. But then something emerged off in the distance. It was a handsome troika pulled by three snow-white horses. Whipping the horses with a chain of ice was a man like none she had ever seen before. His face was wrinkled, red, and bulbous. He seemed very old, and yet he was taller than the tallest man she had ever seen. As he came towards her, the air grew even colder. Marfushka began to shiver violently. Her feet became numb, and she stomped them to try and regain feeling. The old man removed his hands from the pockets of his coat, and Marfushka saw his horribly long, thin fingers. He snapped them again and again, and each time more ice covered the ground around him. By the time he reached her, Marfushka's lips were blue and her teeth were chattering. The man grinned, revealing a mouthful of sharp teeth the color of Arctic ice.
"Are you warm, maiden?"
he asked Marfushka. Marfushka snorted.
"What a blind old fool you must be to ask such a question! Can't you see I'm nearly frozen?"
The man tilted his head and frowned at her.
"Are you warm, maiden?"
he asked again. Marfushka laughed.
"You must be deaf and blind then, because I said that I'm freezing."
The old man looked around himself. He seemed confused by her responses. What an old moron he must be. He looked back to his sled and then back to Marfushka before asking a third time,
"Are you warm?"
This time Marfushka cut him off.
"Can't you see I'm freezing cold? And every time you open your foolish old mouth, it makes me colder."
The old man took a step back. Now he did not look confused. He looked angry. He stood up straight as he loomed above her. Terrible dark clouds began to gather. Inside the izba, Nastya flipped one of the pancakes that had been meant for her funeral. Stanislava was pacing about the house. Every now and then she would open the door to check for her daughter's triumphant return. Nastya had tried to tell her stepmother that she ought to fetch Marfushka back home where she would be safe, but Stanislava wasn't interested. She walked around the little kitchen, muttering to herself, and stopping every now and then to aim a kick at Malish. When Malish tried to escape from under the table, Stanislava picked up a bowl of peeled potatoes and threw it at the little dog. Then she turned to her husband, who sat quietly in a corner.
"It's been long enough. Go and fetch my daughter and see to it that you bring a sleigh big enough for all her gold."
Vasily started to speak, but was interrupted by the little dog barking from under the table.
"Your daughter is frozen, quite stiff and cold, and shall never have a chest of gold."
Stanislava picked up one of the blini. She flung it at the dog and screamed,
"Don't tell such wicked lies! There's a cake for you. Now say, her daughter shall marry a mighty king."
Before she could continue, the door was blown open by a gust of icy wind. Stanislava smiled and said,
"See, this must be Marfushka now, back to share her wealth with her mother."
She ran to the door, but as she gazed out of it, her face fell. Stanislava let out a piercing shriek. What stood in front of her was no longer her daughter. It was a frozen corpse with pale and wrinkled skin. Its eyes were milky white, and its lips were frozen in a grimace of terror. Stanislava let out one horrible, pained sob before she ran forward to embrace the thing. As soon as her arms closed around it, Stanislava began to violently shake. She fell to the ground, and a thick white frost grew over every inch of her body. She gave a last gasp and then was still, frozen solid by her daughter's icy corpse. The ancient version of Father Frost is neither hero nor villain. Maroska was the son of Viles, the god of death, and Mara, the goddess of seasons. Unpredictable, capricious, and merciless, he exemplifies the Russian winter. Of course, the brutal winters are also an essential part of the Russian cultural identity. The ability to survive in extreme cold has often aided Russian troops in fighting off invading armies. For a Siberian peasant, winter also provided relief from the swarms of insects that could make the summertime just as unbearable as the bitter cold. Like the winter itself, Father Frost is a creature of duality. He is kind just as often as he is cruel, and he's known to turn his icy wrath against humans without appealing to any sense of justice. To a modern audience, the story of King Frost may seem strange. It's hard to fathom why Nastya would be rewarded for a sort of suicidal politeness. Perhaps what Nastya is being rewarded for is not a lack of self-preservation, but a deep respect and fear for the power of winter. Nastya knows that those who do not give Father Frost the reverence he is due will meet a gruesome fate. Thanks for listening to Tales. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. You can find more episodes of Tales and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Tales, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker. To stream Tales on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Tales in the search bar. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Michael Langsner, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, Joel Stein, and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Tales was written by Zoe Louisa Lewis, with writing assistance by Maggie Admire. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Just a reminder that we'll be back with a new episode on January 18th. In the meantime, we'll be playing our listeners' most requested episode of 2019. Thanks again for listening. We hope you have a wonderful holiday season.